Tchau. Podcast don't need that. No one's asking for it. I'm doing it. Why?
Tim said, "How are you so jacked?
Skinny.
Jacked.
I know how to wear size small."
Dun, 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 dun.
Go. 5, 4, 3.
So, trying something a bit different today. I'm going to be doing a solo episode. A bunch of you guys have sent in some Q&A questions for me to answer, which I really appreciate. So we're going to get to all of those. If you sent in a question, I will answer it. Thanks for that input. That's awesome to be able to connect with you guys. So the reason that I've chosen to do a solo ep, well, one, we can't do our next guest episode, can't release that next episode until the 26th of March. And also, I just wanted to do something that, well, I've done it one solo episode before, but that was almost a few years ago now. So time to check back in and challenge myself again and just connect with you guys in a bit of a different way. So we'll give it my best shot. We're going to have Rory involved today on camera for the first time. So that's probably a mistake, but we'll live and learn.
Welcome to Young Blood, the award-winning volunteer podcast dedicated to young men's mental health. My name's Callum McPherson. I'm a journalist, and this is a platform for everyday men to share lived experience stories and show that no matter what you're going through, you're not alone. Suicide is the number one killer of young people, and changing that starts with speaking up. So let's do it.
If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss a thing. Help us reach more people by taking 10 seconds to give the show a rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you've got some feedback on this conversation, I'd love to hear it. You can vote in the poll and leave a comment on every Spotify episode. I read them all.
This episode is proudly sponsored by NBNA Group. NBNA has a single focus: to support and guide people on their path to recovery from injury and illness, whether it's mental health or physical education programs, treatment or restoration following injury or illness. They can put together the right services for education, recovery, and return to work. Learning mental health first aid is as essential as physical first aid. This training supports people to spot the signs, have the confidence to provide initial help, and guide a person towards support. It's about learning to listen, reassure, and respond to the warning signs of depression, anxiety, psychosis, and substance use, potentially preventing a crisis. Check out their training and recovery options and services at nbassociates.com.au or Google NBNA Group. This show touches on some tough topics that may provoke strong emotions. If you find anything in this chat distressing, please do whatever you need to do to look after yourself.
As many of you know, I started this podcast after losing my good friend J-Mo to suicide in 2019. It was recently the 5th year anniversary of his death. So on that day, I went and visited his grave, and that was an emotional day for me. It was a heavy day. I just sat there for probably an hour, brought some flowers there, and just remembered him, and I shed plenty of tears, but it was definitely the right thing to do. I got a real release out of just going there and just spending some time, you know, as close to him as I can get. And what I really felt was that all that emotion and all that love is still right there under the surface. And it meant a lot to me to be able to go there and just connect with his memory. And I just felt proud of everything that I've achieved with this podcast. And I imagined what he would have said about it if he got to see it. And of course, the tragedy and the weird thing about it all is that this has all come about out of this tragedy and out of the worst thing that's ever happened to me and lots of other people. But if it wasn't for that tragedy, then this show wouldn't exist. So it's a weird mix of emotions where really proud, but also sad and still have a bit of a heavy heart over that situation. I think I always will, but I just choose to see it in as much of a positive light as I possibly can. So trying to embody some of the traits that J-Mo had that he lived by and had him live on through me in that way. And the fact that I still tear up about it and it still gets to me, I just let that remind myself of the love that was there and let that be a positive thing and embrace that and don't try and shy away from that. So that was a significant thing for me that happened recently, and that's the reason that underpins the podcast. So I just thought I should share that with you guys. All right, so we're going to get into the Q&A. Got heaps of questions from people, some really good ones, some ones that made me think, and a few sort of silly ones as well. So yeah, let's get into it.
Okay, first question we had, Alex Arthur sent one in. Where do you find little pockets of joy throughout the day?
Thanks, Alex. I knew Alex was going to send in a question. I thought if we get no other questions, we'll definitely get one from Alex. He's a dedicated fan. Thanks, Alex. So where do I find pockets of joy? I actually find pockets of joy everywhere throughout the day. Very, very fortunate. So I'd start off with getting to the gym early before the sun comes up, and then I feel like it's all downhill from there. So that, you know, that old saying people always say, oh, if you do the hard thing first, then everything else will feel easy. And I certainly find that that's true. So I like getting to the gym real early, go and lift something heavy, and then you get the endorphin rush and you're already smiling and you come out and, you know, then the sun's up and you're already feeling good. It's like another fan of this show, friend of this show, says Angus Wood. He says, win the morning, win the day. And that's certainly something that I try to do. I like feeling just the sun on my face, just being outside and just being grateful that we live in such a good country like Australia. Don't take that for granted either. Just being outside, just laughing whenever I can at any opportunity. There's funny stuff happening throughout the day, in my conversations with my friends and my girlfriend, colleagues, whatever, anything dumb that can make me laugh, and sort of brighten up the situation. I always try to take that opportunity. I think laughter is the best medicine, no matter who you are. And that also comes from sharing stupid stories and stupid memes all the time, sending GIFs of Dr. Evil, whatever the hell it is, to my friends, just dumb stuff, not taking things too seriously. Those are definitely pockets of joy. Listening to podcasts all the time. So there's rarely a time that I'm in the car or I'm walking and I'm not listening to a podcast. I should probably spend more time being present, but I just love podcasts so much. So I'm always listening to those. Favorite podcasts, JRE, Modern Wisdom, Diary of a CEO, This Past Weekend, and The Clink would be my top five. Feeling useful at work. Everyone likes to feel useful, like you're accomplishing stuff. That's a pocket of joy. And then when someone messages me to say that they've got something out of the podcast and it's meant something to them, that's always brings a smile to my face. And then lastly, as we get towards the end of the day, cooking really good dinners. Breakfast is always like 4 or 5 eggs, pretty boring. Lunch, no one asks for my diet, but whatever I seem to be giving it to. Lunch, we'll just eat like fruit and maybe a packet of beef jerky. And then dinner's really where all the effort comes in. And me and Mary will make some good meal of like roast chicken or steaks or lamb shanks or whatever. And we always make that delicious. So I get a lot of joy out of that. And then reading before bed. I try to read before bed every night. And that just relaxes me. And so there's pockets of joy all over the place.
I just want to come back to one of those points. You said you eat 5 eggs for breakfast every day.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you fit that?
Easily, bro. Like in the pan. Yeah. Well, I fry them all up, and actually 5 is like the maximum that the pan can contain. So that's it's the magic number, man.
Yeah. I reckon we're going to cut that bit out.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Like, yeah. That sucks.
I've got another question that's come in from Sean Ryan. He asks, have you done a take on coping with stress as a major cause for anxiety and depression?
Thanks, Sean. No, I haven't, but here it is. I think that living with a degree of stress in our lives is unavoidable and it's necessary. And without any stress of any kind, we wouldn't grow and we wouldn't have any purpose. So I don't think we should be aiming to live a stress-free life, but of course, managing our stress load as we go along is crucial. So I think a major part of that is replacing the damaging coping mechanisms that you might have with ones that are actually good for you. So there's a lot of things that, you know, you might get an immediate high from. You might have had a stressful day at work. You might have had a fight with your partner. You might have financial troubles, whatever it might be. And we can condition our brains to want to reach for the easy out. So to have a drink, you know, might be drugs, it might be cheap highs, it might be gambling, it might be porn, it might be vaping, might be binge eating, might be sitting on the couch and watching Netflix for 8 hours straight. Not that it's not okay to watch Netflix for a long time, but you know what I mean. So that's the easy option. That's what our brain wants to go to, because it's like, how do I feel better right now? But I think that those things are actually smoke and mirrors. They're a lie. They don't actually make you feel better. In fact, they make you feel worse. So I think a lot of coping with stress in a healthy way is in those moments when actually you feel shit and you want to try to relieve it, rather than go for that easy option, make the harder decision in the moment, and don't reach for your vape. Don't go and have a drink. Don't go to the pokies or whatever it would be. Instead, say, no, I'm going to go home. I'm going to give someone a call, or I'm going to make sure that I get outside and go for a walk, or I'm just going to go home and sit on the couch and take some deep breaths. Just conditioning ourselves to do something that's not actually going to harm us. Because the problem with those cheap highs is, yeah, they might make us feel good for 30 seconds or a minute or 10 minutes, but then they're actually just going to leave us feeling more drained and feeling worse. So that's just no way to cope with stress over time. And it's a case of all those little wins or all those little losses. So they're all going to build up, and you're going to get positive momentum or you're going to get negative momentum. So we've got to be trying our best to make the right decisions, the little choices every day. And if we're doing that, then we're probably going to be looking after our health pretty well. So yeah, I think stress is a unavoidable part of life, but choosing how we manage it is huge to who we become and how we feel about ourselves as we go along. And we do have a lot of control over that. So make sure you catch yourself next time that you're thinking about reaching for an unhealthy coping mechanism to deal with the fact that you're feeling shit, because that's just going to make you feel worse, even though it feels harder in the moment to choose something that's good for you.
Okay, here's an interesting one from Andy Savage. He asks, what's the first thing you notice about yourself when your mental health starts to slip?
Shout out to Andy, another big dedicated fan of the show since day one. So for me, it's definitely overthinking. My mind goes into overdrive and I'll feel that cortisol response in my body, and things will just go round and round and round in my head, and I won't be able to slow it down, and I'll drive myself nuts just thinking in overdrive but not getting anywhere. So that's certainly something that I notice. Heart rate goes up and I feel stressed from overthinking. I also get irritable, so I'm usually pretty chilled, pretty personable, sort of easygoing guy. And if my mental health's going downhill, I get a bit snappy. I don't have the same bandwidth for dealing with stuff that I normally do. And so I might be short with my partner. I might just be moving around in a bit of a chaotic way. And I just need to sort of settle myself down a bit. I also have the desire to look for distractions. So if I'm not doing so well mentally, I've got lots of stuff on my mind. I know I've got stuff that I have to do, but my brain will, like we were just saying before, my brain will look for an easy out, an easy distraction, something that's going to take me away from what my brain's focusing on. But that's often not going to be something that's actually going to help. So I have to bring myself back and ground myself and be able to focus.
That's interesting. All right, we've got another one from Shannon Malloy this time. What's your strategy for getting through a tough day?
Yeah, so it's recognizing when I'm worked up and then taking the time to breathe and slow my heart rate down and just, yeah, recognize how I'm feeling and not feel like I have to be controlled by that. So I think there's a lot to be said for the capacity to be able to step back, take some breaths, sort of just observe what's happening within yourself and realize that you can actually get some space there and you don't have to just react to how you're feeling. You can take a little bit of time and then you can respond better. I'll definitely spend some time outside, get some fresh air, even if that's just being out on the balcony, reading a book. I think getting outside, you know, going to the beach, just going for a walk around your neighborhood, getting outside definitely seems to help when you're trying to sort through stuff or you're feeling sort of overwhelmed. And then I'll talk to someone who's going to listen and make me feel better about whatever it is, like my girlfriend or mum or dad or a mate, and actually vent and say how I'm feeling. And then always you feel better after doing that. Then I'll try to make sure that I eat something tasty for dinner. And then I might like watch something dumb that takes my mind off it and read a book and then go to bed and make sure I can get up early the next day and work out, because then I know I'm going to feel better if I do that. So yeah, that's the way I handle it. And I try not to just drink alcohol instead, although sometimes it is tempting, but I know it's not going to help.
All right. Lisa Lianos submitted a question. How do you look after yourself after each traumatic story that someone's shared with you on the podcast?
Thanks, Lisa. I don't generally view the interviews as traumatic for me personally. I find them uplifting and they give me a lot of hope and optimism. And I hope that you as the listener feel that way as well. So it's super important for me to only have people on the podcast who are now in a good enough place mentally where their story is going to end on a positive note, because we always want it to be uplifting. We want it to be hopeful. We want it to be instructive, and we want to make sure that it's not doing any harm. So given the fact that all the podcasts end on that positive note, they don't get me down. They don't make me feel like it's been traumatic, even though we're often talking about stuff that's really heavy, because it does end on a positive. I always leave feeling uplifted, and the person who's been brave enough to come in and share their story always says that, you know, that was a good experience for them. And that's really important to me as well. So that's what I try to hold on to. But yeah, of course, some of the things that we are talking about are super heavy and very emotionally invested. And I've got a lot to think about as well, because I'm trying to manage this person who's venting and sharing their story and volunteering their time to do so. And I'm trying to keep it to time. I'm trying to ask the right questions. I'm trying to make sure that we cover everything inside the time limit. And then also, we're often talking about heavy subject matter that is at times difficult to listen to. So there is a lot going on, and I definitely do feel drained after I do a podcast, but also accomplished and like, you know, we've done something together. We've done something that's good, that's going to help someone else. So I am definitely pretty knocked out after doing these conversations, but I also feel like, yeah, we've done what we aim to do. And then I'll go home and try to take my mind off it, often by playing PlayStation and chopping the heads off stormtroopers in a Star Wars game or something where I don't have to think about something so intense. So yeah, that's typically how I handle it. And I always see it as such a blessing that I get to have these conversations and that all these guys are willing to share these experiences with me. That's a real privilege. So I just think of it that way.
All right. So Niduran17 submitted a question through your Instagram, the Youngblood Instagram, and he's asked, what's your biggest motivation in the filming of each episode?
Yeah. So my number one goal is to help the guest articulate themselves and share their story in the most articulate and engaging way possible. I want people to come across as strongly as they can, and for the audience to really connect with not only their story, but them as a person. You're only as strong as your guest, and the beauty and the strength of young blood is all the men who are brave enough to come on and share their story. I really see myself as a facilitator, as a prompter, someone who steers the conversation along, but I'm not the star of the show. That's down to the guys that I have come on and share their stories. And the fact that these men are choosing to come in and use this platform to talk about the hardest things that they've ever been through, my motivation is for them to walk away feeling like it was cathartic, and most of all, feeling like it was worth their time. And them opening up like that and often revisiting trauma was worth the effort because it's going to help someone else. And that's really what's making this whole podcast world go round. So that's my job. I call the podcast a lived experience library because I want it to be a resource for as many people as possible to hear others' stories and to learn important information that they wouldn't get anywhere else. You're not going to get it from a textbook. There's something special about hearing it come from another person, someone who's similar to you or completely different to you. That's how we really learn about mental health in a different way and how we apply it to ourselves and those in our lives. So that's the whole point.
Daniel Zimmerman has submitted a pretty interesting question. He's asking if you're looking at the suicide statistics in the past decade, do you think we're focusing on the wrong thing?
Yes, Daniel, I think that we are. I think as a society, we focus far too much on the crisis end of the spectrum. So once people are already on the edge, they're contemplating suicide or they're seriously mentally ill, that's where the bulk of the resources have been going. And that's evidenced by the fact that we know 99% of the funding goes to crisis support services in the mental health sphere. And I think that we need to be focusing far more on the preventative health aspect of all of this, upskilling people and educating people so that far less of us are actually ending up in that crisis zone and then overburdening these services. So I think the focus has to be education. It has to be teaching people about themselves and what they can do to build their resilience. We also need to make sure that there's more supports in place as a society along the way so that people are better equipped to be able to manage their own mental health. And I'm not saying that we should have less of a focus on the crisis end and those services like those hotlines like Lifeline. They do an absolutely incredible job and they are so important. So I don't think we need to have less of those, but I do think we need more of a focus on preventative health initiatives, community-led initiatives where communities are learning how to look after each other and support their own people, even awareness-raising projects like this podcast. I think we need more of these things that are sparking conversations, and it just needs to be a more holistic approach to the whole mental health ecosystem rather than just wait till it's an absolute disaster and then throw whatever we can at it and hope for the best, because as we've seen with those statistics only going up and certainly not going down, that's not working.
Luke Spagic sent one in. He's asked, are there any stereotypes or misconceptions that have been debunked from your perspective through doing the podcast?
For sure. So there's three, I would say, in particular that come to mind. The first one is the misconception that men don't talk. That is categorically not true, in my opinion. I think we just need the space to do it. And when we have the space and we understand that there is value for ourselves and for others in speaking about our experiences and how we feel and why that's significant, then from what I've seen from so many men from around the country is that they're raring to go. They want to have that opportunity. I think men for the longest time have just felt like no one cares. No one wants to hear that from me. That's not part of my job description as a man, is to be talking about those things. No one wants to hear it. They just want me to play my role and do what's expected of me. And so I think we haven't we haven't seen the value in talking about those experiences, and we haven't felt like there's anywhere to put them. So hopefully this is a platform which is slowly starting to change that attitude. And we certainly see from all the guys that we've had on this show that when they do get the opportunity to talk, it means a lot. They relish it and everyone gets a lot out of it. So I hope we can see more of it. The second one is depression isn't real. That is bullshit. There's certain commentators out there that claim that being depressed just means that you have a weak mindset and that you can choose to change that at the flip of the switch, and that really it's all your fault basically and you're just weak. And we know that that's not the case. I think that attitude comes from people taking their own narrow perspective and then applying it to absolutely everyone, like we're all the same. And we know with mental health and with everything that we're not all the same. So I think you can't just totally discount biology and psychology and tell people that they've just got to be more motivated and believe in themselves, because for a lot of people, it's going to take more than that. I think there's a huge component to depression in particular, which is chemical, it's genetic. It's the level of trauma that people have gone through in their lives. And yeah, you can't just say, oh, well, discredit that and that doesn't count. And you just need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get going, because there's plenty of people out there that do all the right things. They go and see a psychologist and they try to get enough sleep and they eat right and they exercise and they talk to people and they still feel depressed. You know, that is the experience for some people. So yeah, we can't just put the blame on them. But that said, regardless of what your situation is, I think taking all the action that you can is going to guarantee that you are in a better place than you would otherwise be. So those things that I just mentioned, absolutely don't stop doing those. You need to be getting enough sleep, exercising, eating right, making sure that you're staying connected to the outside world, being curious, learning things, contributing. Even if you have diagnosed depression, doing those things are going to put you in a much better position than you would otherwise. And I think everyone should be taking all the action that they can to better themselves and improve their lives. But let's give credit where it's due to mental illnesses, because they are definitely a real thing. And the third one is the misconception that suicide is selfish. No, it's not. I think there's a failure to understand the mindset that people are in when they're suicidal. I think when you're in that headset, you've spiraled so much that you can't think of anything else other than ending the pain that you're in. So people who don't have a grasp of what it feels like to be in that position say those things that we've all heard, like, oh, how could such and such do that to their family or be so selfish to make that decision? You know, how could they not think of anyone else? And I think the reality is that when you're in that place, it's not that you don't care about other people, but from all the guys that I've talked to who've been suicidal, you're so overwhelmed that you can't actually think about anyone else in those moments. All you can hear is that voice in your head, and the voice in your head is a nasty voice that's telling you, if anything, that all those people that you love and care about would be better off if you weren't here anymore. So that's what's going on for most people when they're in those moments. And the real tragedy of it is that if you are able to just hold on and let it dissipate, you realize that that voice in your ear is lying to you. And people are never going to be better off if you're not here and you're not a burden. But when we're so overwhelmed, we can believe that for long enough to not give ourselves enough of a chance to be able to realize that. And that's when we lose people. So understanding that people who are suicidal, their brains have been hijacked by emotion and by a chemical imbalance. And in those moments, they're not actually able to think of the consequences for everyone else in their life. All they can think about is getting away from the pain that they're in. I think this is why it's so important to speak how you're feeling out loud. So that voice running around in your head, things, a lot happening inside your mind, speak it out loud, because that's how you're going to realize that things don't add up and that doesn't actually make sense. Tell someone if you can, ring Lifeline, do whatever you have to do to be able to actually speak it out loud, because as long as you just keep it in your head, it has a way of making sense, and that can lead you to a very dangerous place. You speak it out loud and you realize, like, what am I talking about? And you get some distance from it, you get some perspective, and that could be enough to make sure that you stay alive through to the next day.
Carl Wisniewski is wondering, do you think there's a lack of resiliency around menial problems in society?
I think that depends how you define menial problems. Some people are going to define it differently. I guess the mantra of don't sweat the small stuff applies. I think there are lots of people out there who are extremely resilient, and they're typically people who have genuine purpose and have set big goals to achieve and have some real hurdles to overcome. I also think there's a lot of people with very little resilience, and they're often the kinds of people who are entitled. They don't have a strong sense of purpose. They're looking for belonging, but without doing any of the work required to actually earn that, and putting their effort into spouting misinformed rubbish, ganging up with others to tear people down, and wallowing in self-pity rather than trying to learn, being open-minded and being humble and actually trying to better themselves. So yeah, I think there's both sides of the coin. There's people who get way too upset and spend way too much time on things that just aren't that important and have a real lack of a capacity to get on with the job. And then there's people who go the other way, where they are super hard-nosed and super determined and nothing's going to stop them, but they might struggle with actually opening up and letting people help them when they need it.
All right. Technodiverse has submitted a question via the Youngblood Instagram. He said, what do you tell yourself when you're not feeling it?
Yeah, well, no one on earth is feeling it all the time. No one. So you can remind yourself of that. There's going to be plenty of days, plenty of moments where you just think, like, fuck, I don't want to do this. But guess what? Everyone feels that way. So there's plenty of times where you just got to suck it up. I draw on a whole lot of evidence of all the past times where I haven't been feeling it, but I've had to go and make it happen anyway. And I've managed to pull that out of myself and do it. So I think about that. The quote from Henry Ford, I think, is pertinent here, which is, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. For me, I just try to take my emotions out of it. And if it means enough, it's important to me, it's important to other people, then this is a time to put my emotions to the side and just get the job done, regardless of how I feel. But within reason, of course, too. So you don't want to just be driving yourself into the ground while your body and brain are screaming at you to please stop and look after yourself. We're not saying do that. I'm also conscious of listening to my body when I need to, when I need a rest. When I need to say no to something, I make sure that I do that. And I think you just learn with experience what those things are where you need to push through, and you can, and you've got the evidence from the past that you can make that happen. And on the other side of it, you're going to feel better and you're going to do what needs to be done. And then there's the other times where you're like, actually, I need to listen to my body, or I need to listen to what someone else is saying. I need to tell this person no to this opportunity. I need to stay in bed rather than get up and go and work out, whatever it is. You have to be able to make those reads as you go along and get more experienced.
That Retro Man has a question. He says, when you look back at how far you've come, what were the key points in time that pushed you?
Definitely my early journalism career. So when I was 22, I moved out of home, moved to a new town, and started my career as a reporter all at once. And that was really the moment in time where I feel like I turned from a boy into a man, just because there was so much pressure on me at that time in my life. So not only was I learning to fend for myself in the wild, but I also had to come up with a huge amount of content every day. And it was all on me. I didn't have any colleagues that were there to actually help. I had to just sink or swim, basically. And fortunately, I swam, and I feel like I grew a huge amount in that time, but that was massively challenging. And then after that, I went to Townsville. And again, that was huge. I got so much experience out of that, but it was on the other side of the country. Every time I phoned home, mum would be crying because she missed me so much and I was so far away. Oh, little mama's boy. So that was tough. And then even being back in Adelaide, that news job, having some very tough days around people who are very distressed, under the pump, huge demands, going on live TV, having to make it count, having to get the job done, a real do or die mentality. Even though once you get out of the news, you're like, oh, actually, it's just the news. You know, life would have gone on if we didn't get that story to air. But when you're working in that industry, the attitude is very much, this has to happen and the world will end if you don't make it happen. And I spent a lot of days feeling that sort of pressure, which the benefit of which was building me into someone who I think is pretty thick-skinned and good at thinking under the pump and able to get stuff done. So that was really formative, but it was also something I didn't want to keep doing for obvious reasons. Refusing to quit podcasting no matter what. So we're in our fifth year now of Youngblood Men's Mental Health. It's been a grind the whole way along. It's been the greatest thing that I've ever done in my life that I'm most proud of. That's probably related to it being such a grind. I think it's one thing to start something and have a good idea. And how many people do we hear in this day and age say, oh, I'm going to have a podcast. And yeah, you have that rush of motivation at the start, but to actually sustain it over time and stick to your guns and keep doing the show as you intended and growing it and not letting it drop and not throwing it away and somehow finding a way to fund it and all the bits and pieces that go into it, all the social media promotion, thinking of new guests, having those really tough conversations, not losing sight of why you're doing it. It would have been very easy to give it away plenty of times throughout this whole journey, but I've managed to stay on course. And the way that I've done that is by keeping it simple. So I knew that if I overthought it too much or thought too much into the future about what it could be and where I could go, that I'd overcomplicate it and none of that would happen. So I've managed to just keep it simple and just keep going one guest at a time. Just doesn't matter how slow you go, only that you do not stop, which is from Confucius. So I try to apply that with podcasting, and it's stood me in good stead so far. The other thing is just being relentless with my exercise regime. I've been in the gym most days for the past 12 years, and I think that that's fundamental to building me into the person that I am now, giving me the energy that I have now, just that basis of discipline, which has flowed on into the rest of my life. So if you're able, I couldn't recommend having that consistent exercise regime as part of your routine is going to make all the difference. And making the decision to just cut all the destructive shit out of my life. So, you know, partying and all the noise, all the distractions, all the stuff that actually leaves you at a disadvantage, leaves you worse off than when you found it. All those things that you can justify to yourself, and that little voice in your head says, oh, you've been really good lately. You know, you can have a blowout night, or you don't have to make effort to do something healthy instead. Like, why don't you live a little? Not that I don't live a little, but I just do it in a way that's going to be better for me in the long term, but also in the short term. And definitely hard to do sometimes. Sometimes it's just like, fuck it, I've been stressed out, I've been doing so much work, like I'm just going to lean into some of those old crutches. But I know every single time where that leads me, and it's behind the eight ball. So yeah, just being able to actually let that go, let all that stuff go, has been liberating. And yeah, can't recommend that enough.
What brings you the most peace? Alex Arthur wants to know.
Alex, so Alex got two questions in this podcast. So count yourself very fortunate, young sir. What brings me the most peace in terms of knowledge? It is my self-worth. I can look myself in the mirror and I can honestly say that I'm doing my best. And I've had times in my life where that hasn't been true. And I've had times in my life where I haven't respected the man in the mirror, where I've known that I'm doing things that I don't agree with and had that cognitive dissonance. And it is the worst feeling in the world. So that's where I get my peace from now, is that self-assuredness, knowing that I'm being true to myself and being true to others. I'm giving it my best shot. I'm doing the work, and that brings me a lot of peace and equilibrium. In terms of an action that brings me peace, it would have to be reading. And that's reading like an actual book I can hold in my hand and turn the pages. That actually quiets my mind, lets me relax in a way that watching a screen can't. So one of my favorite things to do on a weekend day, if I get a bit of time, sit out on the balcony in my favorite chair, read a book, probably fall asleep because I'm 30 now and I'm becoming an old man.
Jackson Jerusevich wants to know the three biggest things you've learned about yourself through doing the podcast.
Jacko, I can't show up for others in the way that I need to do a show like this, to get everything that I need to get done in my life, if I'm not taking really good care of my mental and physical health. So I just can't burn the candle at both ends. Otherwise, it all just falls in a heap and it doesn't keep going. If I am taking good care of myself, I can do it all. I can work, I can maintain the relationships, I can do the podcast, I can feel good every day. That's all doable, but only if I'm making those right decisions. And if I don't, if I lack discipline, I fall off the wagon, then that all comes crashing down. So I've got to stay on it. The other thing is, well, I just said it before, but yeah, it doesn't matter how slow you go, only that you don't stop. So not trying to race, not seeing podcasting and this whole pursuit as I have to get to a certain level where I'm going to then feel validated and I need to see those numbers rise to a certain mark before I'll feel like this podcast has achieved what it needs to. The number one thing for me, people ask me regularly, you know, what's the goal for the podcast? How's it going? Where do you want it to get to? And my answer has always been, just keep it going. Just keep it simple, keep it going. Make sure that it's there for people, that there's always new episodes happening, and just let the rest take care of itself. Because yeah, if I get too far ahead of myself, it might all stop. And that would be completely devastating for me because I can't see my life without it. So that's how I've always approached it. Just keep doing the next episode. Don't think about it too much other than making sure it's really good quality content, and just keep it rolling and just ride it till the wheels come off. And then the third thing is from the mind of my podcast hosting idol, Chris Williamson, who hosts Modern Wisdom. He says very eloquently, do the thing. And yeah, that is what it comes down to, is do the thing. It's so easy to not do the thing. You can talk about the thing. You know what the thing is. You know what you have to do the thing. And I think a lot of life comes down to your willingness and your dedication to actually just shutting up and doing the thing, no matter what, no matter how you feel about it that day, no matter if it's all coming together for you, no matter if you can't stand it right now or you love it right now, if it means enough to you, just do the thing. Don't talk about the thing. Don't get distracted. Do the thing. So yeah, It sounds so simple, but that is legit. And I think that all the time. When I got that little voice being like, Callum, don't do the thing. Go do that other thing instead. I'm like, just do the thing, man. Just shut up and do the thing.
I got a question that's coming from me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, careful.
It's not from me, but I'm just asking on behalf of all the other podcasters in the world, other influencers, people who have to create content on the regular. What do you do? How do you stay upbeat when you feel like my numbers are actually going down? The numbers, like, I started strong and everyone is excited and I was excited and I'm trying to maintain that level of excitement. How do I do it if my people are starting to not watch and not getting as many upvotes as I used to get?
I don't stay upbeat, man. I fucking rage and I break things and I scream bloody murder and then I cry and I curse the moon. And I get on my knees and I say, why, God, why? Why me? But then I get over that and just remember that it's actually not about the numbers. It's never been about the numbers. I think it's so easy to get caught up with the numbers in this game because it's like, oh, if I'm not growing, if I'm not seeing the progress, if more people aren't listening, then that means that it doesn't have value or it's not up to scratch and therefore I shouldn't bother doing it. But the whole reason I started doing this and the reason I still do it is so that people will listen, whether that's one person or that's 80,000 people, and they'll think, oh, I can see a bit of myself in that story. I got something out of that. Right up to that changed my life. That's why I do the show. And yeah, I'd love if every single episode I had more and more people listening and it was gaining all this traction and it was like this massive boulder rolling downhill, but that's just never how it's been. But that's okay because that's not the point. The point is that it does what it set out to do. It's maintained its integrity. I totally rate the value of the episodes. I think the quality of the show has only gotten better and better. And that's what I can control. So that's what I put it down to. But also, fucking listen, man. Get subscribed, baby, if you can. Share it with your friends. That's the other side of it. But we don't do it for the numbers, but the numbers would be nice.
This is our last question, and it's coming from Coach Global.
Theo Penendez.
If you had 2 minutes to share a message to the entire world on mental health, what would it be?
Oh, this should be easy. Everyone in your life is better off with you in theirs. So no matter who you are not a burden, and don't ever deceive yourself into thinking that you have nothing to offer. Focus on what you do have already rather than everything that you don't. I think it's very easy for us in this world today to approach life from the perspective of, I have to get here. I don't have enough stuff. I need to achieve this certain level of status rather than looking at everything that you do have. Oh, I've got this person in my life who I love. I've got career options that I am excited about, that I enjoy. I've got the capacity to go outside and look up at the sky and feel part of this world, whatever it might be. But you've got to be thinking about what we do have rather than all the stuff that we don't have, because there's heaps of stuff we don't have, but everyone has stuff that they do have, stuff that matters. So let's focus on that. On that note, comparison is the thief of joy. No one cares about your life as much as you do. Because of social media and because we're always showing everyone our highlight reel, I think a lot of us have the attitude of, I need to act a certain way or take a certain job or buy a certain house or whatever to impress X or to make people think that this is the real me, and trying way too hard to impress people. And the joke of it all is everyone's just thinking about themselves anyway. So rather than comparing, think about, what do I want? You know, what do I want to contribute? Who do I want to be for me, not for anyone else? If you can go down that path, I think you're going to have much better odds of actually being satisfied with your life and where you get to. What else would I say? I would say, and this is Chris Williamson as well. Sorry, Chris. Not that he's ever going to listen to this. Or maybe he will. Be optimistic. You've already done the last thing that you said would make you happy. Okay, so you've already done that. So there's been plenty of times in your life where you've set a goal and you've said, I'm going to do this. Once I get here, I'm going to be so different after that. You might have said it to someone else. You might have just said it to yourself. But you've already done that thing you said was going to make you happy. And where are you now? You're still looking forward to the next thing. And that's not a bad thing. Those goalposts are always going to be moving. That's the natural way of things. But don't wait to be happy. Don't wait till you get to that imagined point in the future to be like, all right, now I'm going to sit back and have a cocktail and really just rest on my laurels, because that's always going to keep going off in the distance. And then you're just going to die and it's going to be too late. So make sure that you're enjoying the journey along the way. All the cliches are true, but it's important. To quote another Manosphere icon, Jordan Peterson says, tell the truth, or at least don't lie. And I think if you can just stop lying, your life is going to change massively for the better. And whether that's lying to other people, or probably most importantly, lying to yourself, just stop lying. It's not an easy thing to do. And I'm talking about all those little lies, all those things that you justify to yourself that no one else is going to find out about, but you'll know. You'll know whether you made the harder decision that was better for you, or the easy decision in the moment that's only hurt you. You'll know that. So making sure that if you can get to a place where I just don't lie now, I tell the truth to myself and others. And I don't mean like some little white lie that's going to mean that someone doesn't get their feelings hurt really bad. Like, okay, there's a place for things at certain times. But lying to yourself about bullshit that's destructive for your life, and it's easy for you to get away with, but over time, that's going to cheapen you and it's going to corrupt and permeate throughout your life. And it's going to make a massive difference that you're not even going to see coming. But try not lying to yourself for a bit and see how much better you feel. And lastly, I'll say nothing is more important than your health and your self-respect. I think if you've got those two things in check, you're going to want to look after other people, and you're going to have the capacity to look after other people, and you're going to be a shining light for good in this world. And that's what we need more of. And if you're not in a position right now where your health is very good, and perhaps that's something out of your control, perhaps you're really sick or you're injured, whatever it might be, I think just be in your own corner. Just make sure that voice in your head is a positive one. Think about moving forward and everything that you can do that day to take a tiny incremental step forward. Do that thing. It might seem insignificant. It might seem trivial, like it doesn't matter, but it does matter. And those things are going to stack up over time. So regardless of what position you're in, what action can you take today to take that little step forward? No matter how small it is, you don't have to be 1% better every day. I mean, that's what we hear all the time, and it's a bit of an ask, but there's something that everyone can do every day to take that little step forward, no matter what your situation is. So do the thing, take that step. Rory's giving me the old helicopter hand signal to wrap it up now. He's often doing this off camera when I'm doing an interview. So I've got a clock counting down. I know that the interview is running over time because they always run over time. I can see that, but yet he will still run behind the camera and do this at me until I tell him to fuck off like I don't know. Anyway, that's all the questions. So thanks so much, everyone who responded on Instagram and sent those through. I hope you found those answers to be interesting and somewhat illuminating. It's always harder when you're just talking to a camera lens and not to someone else, because I'm just speaking into the void and hoping that you're listening to it and that you're getting something out of it. Or you might be listening to it being like, I can't believe this dickhead is still talking. But then I guess you wouldn't have made it to the end of the episode. So thanks for giving the time out of your day to listen to this. I'm grateful to everyone who follows the podcast. And I really hope that sharing these stories together helps. And I hope it helps. I'm confident that it does. If it does, please let me know. I love getting your emails and messages, DMs from all of you saying that it does help and what they get out of it. So yeah, please keep sharing that stuff. We've got some great guests coming up in the next month or so that you don't want to miss. So you can look forward to those episodes and hope to see you back here again. Till next time, look after yourself. That's it for this episode. If you like what we're all about, support us by following Youngblood Men's Mental Health on Instagram and Youngblood Mental Health on TikTok. Every podcast episode is recorded in professional quality video and they're all up on our Youngblood Men's Mental Health YouTube channel. So please show some love and subscribe. Thanks to our local business supporters, NB&A Group and Pro Realty Property Consultants. You can find everything there is to know about the podcast at youngbloodmensmentalhealth.com. And most importantly, please share these stories with anyone in your life who needs to know they're not alone. We're all in this together. Catch you next time.